we are very, very lucky to be on a network like CBS. I cannot express how fantastic they have been with me from day one. It's unfathomable why they took a chance on me to do this job. I will never understand it, but they have supported and they have loved this show. And I will be forever grateful for what they've done for me and my family. It's been life-changing.
As James Corden last night on the last Late Late Show, and then he sang his way off right at the end, fairly emotional, as you would expect, the end of a run. What did he say? It was some crazy numbers, like 1,200 shows, I think he said, which I was trying to do. It might be much more than that. I don't know. Whatever the number was, it was an outrageously large number of shows. I was kind of surprised by how many it was. Joining us now, we have Kate Meehan. She is our pop culture editor at DailyBoom.net. Kate, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Good morning.
So, James Corden, done. Interesting.
I mean, we knew it was coming.
Right.
It was announced, what, a year ago?
Yeah.
So we knew it was coming. We kind of knew all the guests that he was going to march out, some of his favorites like Adele and Harry Styles. So we kind of had the setup, but still, I mean, if you were a fan and you watched every night and that was part of your routine, it's still kind of a gut punch, I think.
I did not watch all of it because it looked like, honestly, a lot of times that show was very creative in the stunts and stuff that they would do. And it seemed like the last show was just him and Harry and was it Will Ferrell was the other person? I think that they were just kind of sitting there talking the whole time. I thought, well, I'm sure this is, you know, wonderful and self-indulgent for the people who love it. But it wasn't like the end of The Daily Show where you're like, oh, man, that's amazing, you know, when Jon Stewart left. So it seemed like an odd, but I get it. You know, when you say goodbye, it's hard to say goodbye in any other way, right?
I think so, and I think maybe, you know, the diehard fans, maybe that's kind of what they wanted, because you had 8 years of the creativity, and maybe more so this time around on this day, you just kind of wanted the man that was the ringleader of all of it.
Yeah, a little sincerity for it. And I've seen this quite a bit on show wrap-ups recently when we're watching final episodes, is it's not so much a tying up of the plot as it seems like it's more trying to, you know, give the audience a hug, you know, is more, which I, you know, I understand that. I appreciate that. Meanwhile, we got news yesterday that Jerry Springer had passed away. And, you know, I don't know. I don't think you and I ever talked about this, but I was an anti-fan of the Springer Show. I thought that it was a horrible evidence of where America was as a culture and, you know, a terrible influence on American culture. But I know I'm not in the majority. There are people like me, but I know I'm not in the majority on this. I was never chanting Jerry, Jerry, except as a joke. So.
But the thing is, what you needed to know about him is all of the good that he actually did.
Oh, tell that, because I don't know this story.
Yeah, you don't know this story because he didn't do it publicly. You know, when people do good things publicly for attention, or it looks like it's for attention or self-indulgent, you know, to balance the scales a little bit, he did a lot of things privately. If you went on his show and you were a drug addict and you wanted to get help and he sincerely thought you wanted to clean up, you would go to rehab on his dime. He sent people to get help all the time. He stayed in touch with people to try to encourage them to stay on track. He funded a lot of children's charities and like domestic violence centers. He did a lot of good. On the one hand, he was the ringleader and the circus was, you know, swirling around him. But on the other hand, he understood the other side of real life, the dysfunction and the crazy and the traumatic. And he kind of showed a light on that in you know, that dysfunctional way that people were sucked into. But he also then, you know, tried to get back into politics, dug into the communities and things, because he understood it and he really wanted to help. So that was the flip side of him. It was not quite as public because he always felt like if you were going to do good things, you didn't need to be on a soapbox to do it. You just do those things. If you're doing them for the right reason, then you just do them.
Well, and yeah, obviously as the mayor of Cincinnati back in the day long before he got into all of this stuff. And, you know, I will say this. Every time I would watch even a snippet of an episode, I was horrified. But part of the horror was trying to persuade myself, do I believe there are really people like this in the world? And yeah, which is that's the horrifying part of it, is to realize that there really are families all over America where this is reality for them, which is just, you know, stunning to me. We also had
it's more common.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yes, I don't want to believe that about my fellow humans. I'm calling it the Taylor Swift Act, but it looks like Congress is getting ready to do this outrageous thing of requiring when you buy a ticket that all the fees are up front. Outrageous.
It's shocking that we would be honest.
I know. It's like you'd have a price up on a board somewhere. Isn't that weird?
Well, but the thing is, here's what they do to you. If you've bought tickets in the last several years, you know all too well. You see the price per seat. You pick your number of tickets. And then when you get to that final screen, they throw in the random fees that are not identified, and they throw in tax and everything. You're looking at easily another $50 to $100 in just random fees.
Crazy.
And they throw them in at the very last second. Like, where did this come from and what is this? And now the clock is running down in front of you whether or not you want to actually buy the ticket. So you've got the peer pressure as well. But yeah, like, why haven't we done this sooner? And, you know, so many artists have rallied for it, but I think because of the big mess with Taylor Swift's tickets earlier, well, at the end of last year, Ticketmaster had a colossal disaster when they went on sale with the pre-sale. So it called attention to that company and the way they do things in general, which I think opened the door for other actions to finally be brought to the forefront and, you know, ushered in, thank goodness. So it's connected to her because the mess with her is what made everybody kind of turn their heads and look at Ticketmaster really closely.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I see the same thing with hotels. I see the same thing with airlines. Like, just tell me in advance so that I can pay attention to what the price is. Because, you know, if I don't care about the price, that's one thing. But a lot of us really do. You know, that really is a factor in all of this conversation. Well, Kate Meehan, she is our pop culture editor at DailyBoom.net. The time always goes so quickly. Hey, Kate, as always, thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you again next Friday.
Thank you.
7:46 on News Radio 92.3. Jenna sitting in for Candy today with Traffic on the Fives.
The following Traffic on the Fives is brought to you by Knox Pest Control. Their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, visit knoxpest.com. Knocks them out. North Blue Angel Parkway at Mobile Highway is still backed up at the moment due to an earlier accident, as well as Navarre Parkway and Navarre Beach Causeway in the eastbound lane of Navarre Parkway, still showing a roadblock from an accident. And Gulf Breeze Parkway in the proper area is starting to see some congestion as school begins. I-10 eastbound and westbound, I-110 not reporting any delays. Front gate of NES Pensacola is moving along smoothly. But if you have a traffic tip, call 850-2626-111. I'm Jenna Barr for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Jenna. Somebody texted me in and says, James Corden and the late night shows lost me in 2016 when they turned into the additional arm of the liberal narrative and became super anti-Trump. Before that, never missed it. No, I understand that. And that's actually, I can just about only watch Fallon anymore because he doesn't, right? He's just entertainment. Kimmel and Colbert, I used to enjoy them quite a bit. I mean, they're sharp, funny people, but I just can't watch it. It's so obnoxiously biased and uninteresting. But yeah, I know, so I understand that concern. Hey, if you are thinking about buying or selling a home, obviously you need a good real estate agent to make sure that you get the best deal possible. And by the way, you might think if you're buying like a new home, that just buy straight from. Look, Christina Leavenworth tells me she can get good deals even on new builds, especially in this market where, you know, they might have overbuilt a little bit. And so it might be a little bit of a challenge to get it. She can work on that. And she has had good success at that. On the selling side, obviously, you know, she sells a lot of homes. Like last year, well over 200. I think it was over 230 last year. And one note is when you're thinking about which kind of real estate agent you want to hire, do you want to hire somebody who sells a lot of homes or somebody who sells like one or two a year? And the reason I say that is because there are 3,000 agents on the MLS. 1,600, more than half, sold zero homes in the first quarter. Because it's very common for a real estate agent to sell one or two a year or none, okay? And the question is, do you want somebody who that's the only house they're going to sell this year? Or do you want somebody who's selling, you know, she had 36 sold in the first 3 months?